This is Radio Free Asgard.
And now for something completely different.
Thor the Mighty, Son of Odin. I am the Thunderer. Here in my Northland, my fastness and fortress reign I forever. Here amid icebergs rule I the nation. This is my hammer, my Elmir the Mighty. Giants and sorcerers cannot withstand it.
To free the land. So there we have it, a big piece of nostalgia from 1972, a little chunk of my childhood there with the song Thor by the band Icarus off what I think was their only album, The Marvel World of Icarus. Kind of a weird sort of early 70s semi-psychedelic progressive rock sort of thing, all themed around various Marvel characters. That one, of course, being about Thor. Though I never really understood what the sort of pseudo early 70s doo-wop saxophone music had to do with Asgard. Quite honestly, one of the weaker songs on the album. If you want to hear the other songs on the album, I highly recommend the Iron Man song. I thought that one actually was pretty darn cool. And of course, very much of its time if you're into 70s music. But this album was kind of notable for me because it was one of the very first records, and yes, they were vinyl records back then, folks, that I actually bought for myself with my own money. And I remember it was at a school fair, sort of, like a festival or some kind, and they had a booth there that was selling all kinds of records, and this cost $5, which was a princely sum when you're 10 years old, let me tell you that. Yeah, I kind of wore that record out really, really fast back in the early 70s. I don't think that record lasted a year before it got badly scratched, and that was the end of that. And you know, it's easy to scratch CDs too, but at least when you scratch a CD, you have some semblance of a way to fix it, unlike vinyl records. But anyway, yeah, a little piece of nostalgia there, and hopefully it wasn't too distracting. I seem to remember back in the 70s a couple attempts of various musicians to bring superheroes or, you know, have like comics-themed albums come out that actually were music and not like the old storybook records, you know, where you'd read along or whatever. I remember they actually sold one out of the Marvel Comics in the mid-1970s, which was, Reflections of a Rock Superhero, which was a Spider-Man-themed album, and I'm pretty sure it had nothing to do with this group of guys they were from the UK, but I'm not really sure about that, and quite frankly I can't be bothered to actually go research this. Anyway, I'm sure that nobody's going to complain about copyright, because of course we only play these things for review purposes. Anyway, so there's Icarus, and we are going to cover an issue of Thor here. So let's just go on with our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, mighty Thor.
I'll be honest, I almost like the jingle more than I like the Icarus song. All right, so we're going to be covering Thor number 9, also known as Thor number 511, has a February of 1999 cover date. Cover art is by Johnny Romita Jr. and Claus Johnson, and shows what looks like Zelia, the evil goddess, kind of the evil goddess queen, and what looks like Odin, dressed in this sort of fancy armor, and they're holding their hands. If they're not holding hands, at least they're holding their hands near each other, and there's this huge bright light emanating from where their hands are, and we have the ghostly image of Thor reacting in horror to this horrible light, and I have no idea if it has anything to do with what happens inside the book. Somehow I doubt it. One thing I will say, though, is the art on the cover is nowhere near as good as the art inside the book. And we'll find out why in just a moment. We open up to the splash page and a gorgeous shot here of Thor flying towards the camera. The coloring in this issue, I have to say, it's obviously digital coloring and is absolutely frickin' gorgeous. Love it. Here are the credits for this issue. The writer was Dan Jurgens. Artists, special guest artists, John Buscema and Jerry Ordway were the art team for this issue. Gregory Wright was the colorist. Richard Starkings of Comic Craft was the letterer. Tom Brevoort was the editor. And Bob Harris is the editor-in-chief. And really nice job here on the coloring, especially the coloring of Mjolnir, which actually looks like it's made of metal for once. That's something you don't see every day. Usually it looks like this kind of blob of stone or whatever. Anyway, the title of the story is called Answers. And we have a shot here of Thor flying through the sky over New York City. New York City! And, of course, we get your obligatory explanation here. For weeks, the mysterious events surrounding his homeland of Asgard have weighed heavily upon him. Once a gleaming beacon of noble dreams, the Eternal City is now in ruins, its citizens vanished. Or so he believed, until the enigmatic Tockets spoke of returning there. And that, of course, is referring to last issue and the issue of Spider-Man that we covered last week. And so Thor is landing on the streets of New York City, where we see a lot of people fleeing in terror. No, they're not fleeing in terror because Thor is landing in their midst. But of course, typically, Thor is landing in the middle of the street. But he is landing by, like cops or detectives or something. The detective guy says, "Good to see you again, Avenger. We can use the help." And Thor's like, "Do I know thee? O'Neill, NYPD. We met a few weeks ago, and I guess the mortals just didn't register with..." And there's a giant scracked, as there seems to be some sort of an impact or explosion at the feet of the policeman, and he is thrown back. Thor just stands there perfectly stock still like a statue, which is either sloppy or Thor really was not very intimidated by whatever happened here. Thor says, "By Heimdall's horn, yon blast was fired by one I thought gone forever." And the detective is like, "Yow!" And we turn the page, and it is Replicus. Where have we seen Replicus before? Yeah, well, it's been a long time, but he's appeared a number of times in Thor comics throughout the years. And I think we actually saw him back in the Journey into Mystery days, if I'm not mistaken. So anyway, we have Replicus, and he's this big green armored kind of robot android looking dude. And he fires a beam out of his forehead, which destroys a police car with a shkakow. And it looks like they have the they have these little square shields, and they're dodging, I guess, the breaking glass or something from the car. Perspective's a bit off in some of these issues, and especially, I think, in this frame. But anyway, Replicus is coming out of a bank, which apparently he has robbed. Why an android would need to rob a bank? I have no idea. Obviously, androids are in need of money. Thor doesn't seem to be moving much to stop him. So Replicus destroys the police car, and the cops are like, "You hear that? Sounds like Goldilocks actually knows this monster." "Good, considering his firepower this big boy can crank out, we're going to need his help." And Thor's like, "There's no mere boy, officer, but an automaton possessed of powers numerous and intent most evil. Once before did yon villain's merciless onslaught of thievery threaten mankind, till the power of Thor didst vanquish him." Yeah, I knew we'd seen him before. It's back in Thor number 141. Somehow I don't think that robbing a bank is threatening mankind. But, you know, Thor is a drama queen after all. So Thor takes off after him, and he's got a very, very dynamic but overly dramatic sort of pose here, Thor whirling his hammer around. Once again, the perspective is really wonky in this, the way he's swinging his hammer around in an arc. And it is very, very John Buscema looking, but for some reason, it looks like he's swinging the hammer through his arm, which wouldn't happen, to say the least. But Thor is pretty angry. He's going to chase after Replicus, and he gets ready to fling his hammer. He says, "Thy destructive swath shall continue no more, Replicus. I bid thee halt, or face the righteous wrath of Thor." And, you know, Replicus continues to flee the scene, so Thor flings Mjolnir after him. And, of course, because Thor likes to narrate everything he's doing, we have some narration here. "His flight continues unabated. So be it. The gauntlet of conflict hath been hurled. Nothing that lives, be it man or mechanical creation, can withstand the enchanted hammer of Thor. Do thy work, Mjolnir. Bring down yon fleeting coward Anon." And flings Mjolnir at him, and it bounces off the back of Replicus with a skatang. And Replicus goes flying, lands on top of a brown, ugly car. Nobody has a car that color. It's like this is my poop mobile. It's a horrible color. Anyway, so Replicus crashes down into this car with a krung. And he says, "Replicus shall not be stopped." And Thor is like, "When we did battle in the past, 'twas a match too even for my liking. I would finish with thee quickly, that I might attend to matters of greater." Replicus picks up his foot and blasts Thor in the stomach with his like boot jet thing. I guess it's like jet propulsion, or I don't know what it is. Shouldn't affect Thor as much as it does. But with a shoom, it like kind of repulses Thor like some sort of like laser blaster or something. I'm not really sure. Then it says, "Replica shall not be stopped," and knocks him away. And then he turns on a flashlight on top of his helmet, and he says, "This must end." And Thor's whirling his hammer around, creating like a whirling shield, like kind of like he'd used to in the old days. There's something about this, you know, even the writing of this, that seems very retro, almost like he was trying to write a retro Thor story. And this blaster, whatever it is bouncing off of this the hammer's shield that it's kind of whirling around and creating, which makes no sense since it looks like a fire or a light beam or something. Thor says, "None alive wishes an end to this battle more so than Thor." And Replica stretches out his fingers. I kind of remember this from the old issue. Kind of gloopy, rubber-like fingers and wrapping around Thor's wrists. And Replica says, "Perhaps the crushing grip of my retractable cobalt cable fingers shall stymie your interference. Strong and unyielding as thy cables might be, the muscles and sinews of Thor are unsurpassed. For thine actions divert the god of thunder from matters most urgent. And to that, I say thee nay." And, you know, Replica has his fingers wrapped all around Thor's wrists. And Thor just basically, he just kind of grabs the fingers and pulls Replica towards himself. And then gets a good old left hook. And with a batang, Replica goes flying. Thor, of course, continues to narrate here. "Life amid mortals hath oft caused Thor to withhold his full strength at times, but that shall not happen today." And smashes Replicus in the belly, splits Replicus right open, and the Replicus robot is falling to pieces. And I guess he has taken all the money from the bank and stashed it inside his body. So, of course, all of the money goes flying around, and there's people running around picking up the money and, you know, all this conversation going on. And Thor says, "So sayest Thor, so shall it be." And the girls are hitting on Thor. "Whoa, you don't see guys like him at my health club. Girl, one look at Thor makes every other man pale by comparison. Call me, hun, morning, noon, or preferably night." And the police detective is like, "Nice work, Avenger. No way we could have brought him down." And Thor says, "Such is the nature of honor. To assist whenever the lives of mortals are threatened. Replicas shall affect thee no more." And the detective turns to Demetrius, who just happens to be standing there, says, "You're lucky, Demetrius. Thanks to the big guy here, we won't be needing your paramedic talents today. Where's your partner?" Yeah, because obviously he's not there. "Jake took off early. Said he was taking his fiancée and her kid to the Giants game." And Thor's like, "Forsooth, I had forgotten said contest was today." The detective's like, "Didn't figure you for a football fan, Avenger." And other cops are coming around and says, "HQ just called. They traced a radio signal controlling that robot to the Shores building just up the street." And Thor says, "Then 'tis up to Thor to write the final chapter upon this act of villainy." And he goes flying off, attached to Mjolnir. No sign of Mjolnir malfunctioning in this issue so far. And Demetrius is left behind with the detective, and he says, "You know, something about him seems kind of, I don't know, familiar." "You gotta be kidding me." And we shift scenes to a squalid apartment here. There's a couple ne'er-do-wells hanging around, and you can kind of tell that, you know, John Buscema is not really down with what kids are wearing in 1999. So he's got this really weird, I don't know, almost 1970s clothing, but he's got the backwards baseball cap and the baggy jeans, which, I'll be honest, they're not very convincing. It's like an 80-year-old guy trying to draw what kids dress like in the 1990s. And so he got two ne'er-do-wells, and they're kind of sitting around this apartment. And he's like, "What's the deal, Sykes? You said you could run that crazy invention."
"Look, I thought I could. At least I did when we found that spare Replicus in my uncle's old digs. But no one told me Thor was going to show." "Thor's more. All I care about is the..."
And then you hear a giant crash, and Mjolnir comes crashing through the wall with a bram, and Thor's there. and the two kids are kind of scattered on the ground. The one guy's wearing a t-shirt with a, looks like a alien on it. And Thor's like, "Yon authorities are aware of thy crimes. Thou shalt surrender to them anon, or suffer the anger of Thor."
"Yes, sir. Whatever you say, Mr. Thor, sir. Could I get your autograph?"
And instead of making sure they don't run away or anything, Thor just goes ahead and leaves. He just flies out the big hole in the wall that he created, heedless of the property damage he caused. Because, you know, I'm pretty sure these kids don't own that. Anyway, the insurance rates in New York City are obviously insane in the Marvel Universe. So Thor, saying out loud as he flies out the hole in the wall, says, "Now, though I might wish to solve the matters perplexing Thor, 'tis the affairs of Jake Olsen to which I must attend." And he lands in the giant stadium parking lot and hides behind another poop brown car. What is this with these poop brown cars? That's disgusting. Marvel Universe is full of cars made out of poop. Anyway, he bangs his hammer on the ground with a fashash, changes back into Jake Olsen, who of course is late to meet his girlfriend and his girlfriend's daughter at this game. And he goes running into the stadium and thinking to himself, "Whilst I atone for the true Jake Olsen's death, I must needs live his life and do it honor proud as Marnot commands. And so Thor must carry on not only with Olsen's profession, but his personal life as well." And we shift to inside the stadium and people watching the game, and we see Jake Olsen's girlfriend and her daughter. And the daughter is drawn here looking a lot, she looks a lot like Mary Jane Watson, and very, very adult when you consider she's supposed to be, what, like a preteen girl, like 9 or 10 years old. But anyway, she's bitching at her mom.
"See, I knew Jake wouldn't show."
"Mandy, give the man a fair chance. He's an emergency medical technician, and you know overtime is part of the job. He'll be here. Count on it."
And Jake shows up, and he's got a tray of snacks. He's like,
"Miss Fairmont, you should have been a defense lawyer."
And the kid's like,
"You made it? Hope you like lots of onions on your chili dog, Mandy." "Wow, and a malt, too. Thanks, Jake."
And his girlfriend is like, "That makes two of us, Jake. It's important to me that you two get along." Because, of course, that's how you get along with kids, is you buy their love by buying them things.
"If football and junk food are what it takes, so be it."
And Jake is sitting here drinking his malt or whatever it is, and he's thinking to himself, "Verily, I do grow more uncomfortable in this life. Though 'tis clear Milady Hannah hath great love for Jake Olsen, 'tis a love that goes unreturned. For my heart can go to no other, whilst the matter of Asgard doth occupy me still." And we shift scenes then, of course, back to Asgard. And it's not the gleaming city of Asgard that we're used to, but rather a wretched, evil ruin. And it's an evil Asgard, and all the buildings are gray and covered with gook or something. Anyway, so we have a little bit more of exposition here. "For countless generations, men told tales of Asgard. Tales of good versus evil, of glorious victory and epic bravery over daunting odds. Often the story centered around the living embodiment of the majestic rule, the all-seeing, all-powerful Odin. Interestingly enough, of all the myriad tales, none spoke of defeat." And we see Odin, of course, and he's still in his Santa Claus bondage outfit. Interesting that Buscema actually obviously studied the art of the issues before he took over, and the design is more or less consistent. It's not identical, and certainly Buscema has his own take on it, but he definitely does seem to have read the prior issues to know what's going on. So we have Odin in bondage here, and Paracus says to Odin,
"How does it feel, old man? Warriors marched into battle under your command and were honored to die pledging servitude to you. You've known the worship of both your subjects and mortals. Now you can't so much as wipe your nose. How does it feel to be helpless as a babe?"
"Get thee gone, Pericus. Thou art beneath my attention."
"You've lost, all of you. My only regret is that I'll never have the chance to dance on the bones of your son."
And all of a sudden, we have a visitor joining Pericus and Odin here in this dungeon. And it's Tockets, who we saw last time. And I have to say, John Buscema draws a pretty cool Tockets. He looks pretty much like he did last issue.
I bring great news, of which you'll hear more, for I have seen the Odin son, Thor.
And Pericus is like, by the bile of Zelia, he's alive. And Odin doesn't believe it, or else he's trying to fool Pericus. He says, 'Tis an imposter. Thor did perish with the rest of Midgard's heroes. And this is actually apparently going back to some mini-series event thing that was in the Marvel Universe at that time. And Pericus turns to Adva, or whatever her name is. It says,
The Continuum Gateway is yours to command, Adva. Take me to Thor, now!
And we cut back to Earth, where we see Hannah and Jake and a very adult-looking Mandy, who, once again, she's very inconsistently tall. So in some of the panels, she's almost as tall as her mother, but in some of the others, she's, like, really short. So it's not like John Buscema, maybe, to be that inconsistent, but he is inconsistent in this episode, unfortunately. And they're coming out of a restaurant. It's an Italian restaurant here. And Hannah's saying, Thanks for the dinner, Jake. Best lasagna I've ever had.
How about we try the Scandinavian feast next time?
Excuse me? Scandinavian? What's that? Some new California culinary trend?
So I hear, Mandy.
Anything more you'd like to say, young lady?
Thanks again for this great jacket, Jake. The kids at school are gonna drool.
Hey, maybe she's Tuckett. She's rhyming. So, yeah, so Jake has bought her this giant's jacket, and it's big enough that her arms don't show. Or, no, she's wearing it on her back like a cape. Anyway.
Yeah, I haven't been your biggest fan, and I guess I want to say, I'm sorry. You make Mom happy, and that's all that counts.
And he's like, thanks, kiddo. I appreciate it. And Hannah hails a taxi, and the two girls get in, and Hannah's like, You sure you can't come by for coffee?
Not when I have to be on deck at 8 a.m. Rain check?
Count on it, lover. And the taxi goes driving off. And Jake is like, finally. It's like, finally, those women are gone. And he runs into an alleyway, bangs his fist on the ground with a whud, and with a fashash changes into Thor. And Thor, standing there in the alley, says, At last the time hath come. The truth shall be uncovered, of that there is no doubt. For until such happens, Thor, god of thunder and son of Asgard, shall not rest. Though I now find myself unable to reach Asgard directly, there are other places, other realms, where answers might be learned. Thus shall Mjolnir pierce the gulf betwixt dimension and space. And he whirls Mjolnir round. And, of course, he creates his trademark, the Ajax White Tornado. Actually, in this issue, it's really, really cool because it's not just like the Ajax White Tornado. There's lightning and shit coming out of it. And actually, that looks fairly awesome. I really like that. So Thor appears in the middle of this sort of flaming wasteland, which is obviously not Asgard. We'll find out what it is in just a second. But it's a very familiar-looking sort of landscape. And Thor says, And so I arrive, in the land of the dreaded trolls. Alas, though my heart doth sink in a place of dank evil, 'tis here that knowledge may be found. I beseech thee, reveal thyself if thou art able, for Thor has dire need of thy services. And we find that he's standing in this, like this huge fire pit, and there's this weird alien-looking dude here, with a flashlight coming out of his forehead. Where have we seen that before? I think it was back around, Thor number 130? Somewhere around that, right after Thor got his own book. It says,
Long has it been since the word of Orichal, at once the mightiest and most helpless in all of existence, was sought.
Okay, so I got a question here before we continue on with this. Orichal. Okay, so he was a prisoner of the trolls. Remember, King Garoder had imprisoned him and was making him do his bidding, and he's surrounded by this mystical flame. But Thor defeated the trolls, and Oracle left. Oracle flew off into space. So why is he back here as a prisoner of the trolls? So, is Oracle even stupider than Aunt May? I don't know. Anyway, I'm guessing they're not going to tell us what happened here. But this is very inconsistent, because Oracle was able to escape and get away. Anyway, so long as these mystical flames surround me, I am once again slave to Geroder. But like so many others, he too hath vanished. Speak, Thunder God, why art thou here?
Thou art possessor of the infinite eye, Oracle. When the smallest speck in the most remote of the corner of the cosmos moves, thou art aware of it. Tell of Asgard's fate, mighty one, and Thor shall be in thy debt.
Well, he could just free him, and then he'd be even more in his debt. Anyway, so Oracle says,
True, a catastrophe hath laid waste to my home, but my missing master hath not freed me to speak of such events.
Ah, how convenient.
Alas, the voice of Oracle may not be heard on this.
As Prince of the Golden Realm, and all due accordance to such title carries, I hereby free thee to speak freely.
Thine authority here means naught, Odin's son. Leave.
And Thor's pretty angry here. Looks like he's getting ready to smack the ground with his hammer. He's like,
zounds! Speak now, lest the fury of Thor unleash a raging storm that rips this evil land asunder.
And the voice comes from behind Thor.
A temper tantrum hardly befits you, Thunder God.
And it turns out to be Marnot, and Thor turns around and says, Marnot! Because, of course, it's Marnot.
Indeed, the time for explanation has come.
And Marnot is appearing out of a big green billow of smoke, very much looking like Mysterio from the Spider-Man series in this picture.
Mayhap the time hath come instead to strike thee down, says Thor.
Do so, and you'll accomplish nothing, says Marnot.
Pray then, speak thy peace, and do so quickly, for the patience of Thor is long worn away.
And he's holding Mjolnir to Marnot's throat, which is kind of threatening, and Marnot doesn't seem real impressed by that.
Watch your tongue, Thunder God. Remember, it was I who gave you second life. Nevertheless, circumstances have changed. The veil must be lifted. This tale begins not recently, but long ago when you were but a lad. Asgard glowed brighter than the brightest of stars, and your father, Odin, was unquestionably the highest of the high. Yet Odin's awareness of the rest of the universe was not yet fully developed.
And you see Odin in his throne room, and Thor is there playing with, looks like toy cars, which doesn't really make sense, but okay. But Thor's there and he's playing with something. And the vizier is there from Odin and says,
All hail to the presence. Your humble servant doth request an audience with thee.
Speak, vizier. Thine agitated state is troubling.
Tis Longkar the scout, my liege. He hath returned.
Because they really hate Longkar, and it's very disturbing that he comes back. So Longkar comes into the throne room. He's like,
Indeed, sire. My journey hath carried me back to the Rainbow Bridge of Asgard with dire tidings.
If thou art worried, then so too is the ruler of Asgard, for thou art known to be a most reasonable man, Longkar.
And Marnot continues to narrate here.
During his travels beyond the Nine Worlds, Longkar happened across a far-off city of gods, comparable to Asgard.
Narcissan! The opposite of Asgard in so many ways. Where Asgard is the light, Narcissan is the dark. A place empty of soul and bereft of reason. A city of gods who ruled with iron fists.
And we see this Longkar, and he's on a flying horse. Much like the flying horse that we've seen elsewhere in the Thor series from time to time.
Methinks yon city appears similar to golden Asgard, but it doth exude an air of evil. Mayhaps 'twould be best to scout yon planet first.
Longkar lands on this city, this evil city, and the people bow down to him, and they're like,
On your knees, it's one of the masters.
Please, I beg of you, favor us with kindness. Do so, and all I have is released to your name.
And Longkar's like, Nay, thou dost confuse me with another.
We pledge every night. My daughter is only 4 years old. A perfect sacrifice.
And she holds up her daughter. And the kid looks positively thrilled to be sacrificed to Longkar. And Longkar's like,
Heimdall's eyes, 'tis madness. No god of honor would countenance such behavior.
He's struck in the chest by the force bolt of this evil goddess. And you can tell she's evil because she's wearing a black bikini with spiky shoulders and got a spiky headdress thing on with evil-looking horns.
Aye, Saren, would and do. These minions are ours, stranger, and we will tolerate no interference.
And Lockhart's like, arg, because he's being burnt with fire. And as he's fighting against this goddess, and Marnot is still narrating here.
Not only was Lonkar the realm's greatest explorer, but one of his fiercest warriors as well. For the better part of a day, Lonkar and Saren battled good against evil, god against god, until Lonkar plunges his sword into her chest, and he's like, "Thou hast earned thy place in hell, woman!" And there's lightning and fire and stuff get blasting all around, and she looks like she's pretty much dead. And so Lonkar is running towards his horse, and there's like lightning crashing down around him. And
even as I hasten to return to Asgard, the heavens erupt. Yet they must not be stopped, for Odin must needs be alerted.
And we see Perichus is chasing after him, and he's there with his giant letter C on the end of a stick, which is sort of his scythe. It doesn't look as cool when John B. Summit draws it as it does when Johnny Romita draws it. But anyway, I swing it around, and it's like,
"If this Odin is your king, then you, he, and all your kind shall suffer, for you did slay the bride of Perichus."
And Perichus is swiping at him, and I get a little more narration.
"Perichus allowed Ylankar to escape, because he wanted more than one death. He wanted war."
And Thor's kind of being thoughtful here and says, "Recently have I dreamed of that age, of Odin preparing all Asgard for a looming battle to rival Ragnarok."
"Your dreams are memory, Thor, for such a battle did occur, and it was bloody."
And we get a full page spread here of Odin, and he's fighting Perichus, and see some of the other Asgardians here. A lot of sort of nondescript, pseudo-Viking-looking gods, both good and evil. Though, honestly, these guys all look evil, except for Odin. But anyway, so Odin's here wading out into battle, and he's got this giant, like, futon covered around his belly, which doesn't seem like it would be very practical in battle. And not only that, but it would seem really hot. But I guess if you're in the middle of battle, you don't care if it's a little hot. So we got more narration, blah, blah, blah.
"Shortly after Lonkar returned, the gods of Narcissus, the dark gods, attacked. It was a war beyond any concept of war. One without glory, because of the sheer numbers of casualties on both sides were overwhelming. It was more than a war of vengeance. It was also a war, a philosophy, for while the Asgardians allowed their mortal followers freedom, the Dark Gods ruled with terror and an unrelenting power conditions that they refused to relinquish. But after 2 weeks of combat, the Dark Gods prevailed. Asgard had fallen."
We see the Magistan Zelia, and she's standing in this big, big kind of billows of pink smoke, and she's like,
"It's over, Odin. I grant you the choice of life or death. Pledge fealty to me as my consort and make Narcissus even stronger, and I'll spare you and your children."
"Never, evil one. Thy ways hold no sway over Odin."
"Such is your choice. Kill him, Perichus."
And Perichus comes after Odin, and Thor picks up a spear and pitches it to Odin, and he's like,
"Nay, take this broken spear, father, and defend thyself."
Now, you kind of wonder why Thor didn't remember any of this. Anyway, so Odin gets the spear, and it's like,
"Your presence and bold move were decisive, Thor. They renewed Odin's purpose and vigor, and enabled him to salvage victory from certain defeat."
Orichal speaks up here, and he says,
"Marnod speaks true, Asgardian. 'Twas as it was."
So it's like, yeah, that's real. And Marnod's like,
"Odin banished the dark gods to a barren corner of the universe, while Perichus was held a hostage, imprisoned on Asgard, in a special cell known only to Odin. Why hath the memory of this eluded Thor all those years? Yeah, okay, so they're going to explain it.
The war sent many warriors to Hela's embrace. The event was so traumatic, the near defeat so oppressive, that Odin himself blocked the memories of everyone in Asgard except his own.
That seems to me that would be a really bad idea. We'll talk about that at the end.
Thou remain silent all this time. Why?
As I said, much has changed. Surely you've guessed by now that the Dark Gods escaped to destroy Asgard. In fact, your own misguided hammer throw freed Perichus when you first visited the ruins of the realm. Now the Dark Gods inhabit your home. Worse, they know you are alive and on Earth.
Then my father and brethren are doubtless prisoners. Let them know that there shall be war unto death once more. So swears Thor,
and he raises up his hammer and shooting out all this pink lightning, and we see the figures of Adva and Perichus kind of looming behind Thor symbolically, and we have the next issue blurb. Next issue, war.
Huh, good God, y'all. What is it good?
Oh, sorry. And that is Thor number 9 from February of 1999. As issues go, this is kind of a weird one. It has kind of a weird retro feel to it, and I think that a lot of that has to do with the Stan Lee-ish sort of dialogue that we have Dan Jurgens writing in this issue, which is a little bit different from what we've seen him writing before. Now, maybe he's writing in a slightly different style for this issue because he's working, of course, with one of Marvel's great artists, that being John Buscema. Now, interestingly enough, Buscema here being inked by Jerry Ordway, who's an incredibly talented artist in his own right. In fact, I like Jerry Ordway's art rather better than John Buscema's art. But here we have Ordway inking Buscema and not overpowering him, not inserting his own style into Buscema's pencils. Now, there's a lot of little wonky bits to the artwork here, and I've mentioned a couple of them during the story. We have, I don't know, the bad perspective on a lot of these pages. Now, I'm going to chalk that up to the fact that in 1999, John Buscema's health has begun to fail. And indeed, this Thor issue is one of the last things that he did for Marvel before he died in 2002. But he had Ordway there as inker and embellisher, and that should have... I don't know. He should have caught more of these wonky perspective issues and that sort of thing, but maybe he was just leaving it because, after all, Buscema is a legend. He drew Thor for years and years and years. And you know, you have to have respect for that reason alone. But I think that he should still fix some of the wonkier bits. There is some great stuff here, of course, art-wise. I really like the sense of composition in a lot of these panels. Even though he was tending not to draw any backgrounds, I have a feeling that he only drew backgrounds where they were absolutely necessary to draw them. In the crowd scenes, he's drawing what look like real people. And it's almost like he's sticking his friends and relatives into the scenes. I hate it when artists do that. I hate it when it's obvious. And I think in this issue is fairly obvious that he's like doing sketches on the train or something and inserting these people into the artwork, and it seems forced. Now, there's one other aspect of this, and it's not really Buscema's fault, and it's something I've noticed in general. But when you get a character that's designed by an artist with a really distinctive style, and I think that Jack Kirby is a particularly good example of this, it can be hard for another artist to come on board and make the character look right. And this is what we find in this issue, and in particular with Marnot. The way that Marnot was designed is designed to play to the strengths of one particular artist, that being Johnny Romita Jr. This is obviously a character that Johnny Romita Jr. designed. And anybody who comes in and draws him other than Romita Jr., it's not going to look right. And Marnot really looks off throughout this entire issue. Again, I don't really think it's Buscema's fault. He was doing a fine job, certainly a very professional and craftsman-like job here. But Marnot doesn't really look right, and that bothers me a little bit. The other Dark Gods look fine. It's just Marnot in particular. Maybe it's because of the stylistic flourishes that were designed into that character.
it's easy, I think, to draw a good Paracus. Paracus is more like a Buscema design. So it's easy for Buscema to make Paracus look cool. After all, Paracus doesn't look all that different from Pluto, and Pluto being one of the characters that I believe Buscema designed after Kirby had him appear for the first time. But that sort of the modern image that we have of Pluto was certainly one, I think, that was refined by Buscema himself. Story-wise, the story is nothing special. I have a bit of a problem with this Dark God story by Dan Jurgens, and I haven't really been able to put my finger on it maybe until now. One of the problems that I have with this story is the stakes are high, this story is not building the way it should. There's not this ever-increasing anticipation of what's going to happen. You know that the good guys are going to win, so it just seems to be kind of, okay, it's just kind of there. The story at this point should be building to a fever pitch. You've got to be wondering what's going to happen. You have to really be concerned. At this point, I'm just kind of meh. I don't care what happens. I know that the Asgardians are going to win, so it doesn't mean anything. And I think that that's the weakness of the story. I happen to think that Dan Jurgens can do better than this. Maybe I'm wrong. Was he that bad of a writer? I don't know. But so far, I don't know, other than the first few issues, I'm not real impressed by what's going on here. Now, this issue, of course, like the rest of the story, has been reprinted in the Thor Dark Gods trade paperback. So if you're near a comic shop and look for it, you may find it. Okay, so with that, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up the show for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Once again, you can contact the show if you want to. You can email the show at radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. You can also join us on Facebook and the Radio Free Asgard Facebook group, where you look at pictures of Thordis and dogs dressed up as Thor and little kids dressed up as Thor and other people dressed up as Thor and occasionally some cool comics art as well. So feel free to join us there. And once again, thanks very, very much for listening. This is Tom Harris in Chicago, Illinois. And we'll see you next week here on Radio Free Asgard. Okay, you talked me into it. We're going to close out the show with Iron Man by Icarus.
Thank you.